Hello, and welcome to the Capital Compass Podcast. We are the official podcast of the New York State Catholic Conference. I'm your host, Jillian. In today's episode, we'll be talking with Bishop Edward Scharfenberger from the Diocese of Albany about his recent mission trip to Mexico. In today's episode, we have Bishop Edward Scharfenberger, or as everybody in the diocese calls him, Bishop Ed. So welcome.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
So you are here to talk about, mainly to talk about your recent mission trip to Mexico. So can you tell us a little bit about that? I know you wrote about it in the diocese newspaper, The Evangelist, but...
Well, I was invited to do this mission trip by Dan Jason, who is a former Focus missionary. And as you know, Focus is primarily concentrated on ministry to young adults on college campuses. But then there is more that they do. And one of the missions, actually, that Dan experienced was in Mexico City. And he's spoken about this, for several years. Finally, the opportunity presented itself. We actually joined a parish from Bethesda, Maryland, the parish of Our Lady of Lourdes, who had actually booked this particular five-day period, and was in October. And so we joined them and flew to Mexico City, and were met at the airport, and went to stay with a group of sisters, the Sisters of the Concepcion, which is a convent not too far from the Basilica of Our Lady of Guadalupe. And I had never visited the Basilica before, too. So on the very first day, we walked over to the Basilica to kind of put our our trust in Our Lady. And, of course, the wonderful story of those four apparitions in themselves is a story in itself that can be told in another time, another place. But so we really dedicated our mission to her and whatever it is that she would show us. And the mission consisted of encounters. I would say it was an encounter with the poorest of the poor in the city of Mexico in two separate locales. One was actually at the city dump, literally the dump, and talk more about that in a minute. And the other was actually in a town square not too far from the shrine itself, where we went on Saturday early after Sunday, I should say, early afternoon, and actually engaged the poor. And you know, as I say, the organizer, if you will, the one that has hosted us and has and does host these tours is a gentleman by the name of Craig Loring, and there is a website that you can read about him and his history. He's a convert to the Catholic faith. He was a Christian, but convert to the Catholic faith, and the work that he is doing with people who he has worked with, who were really living on the streets, and whom he has assisted in being able to come to a level of sustenance whereby many of them have actually found homes for their families. It's wonderful. But his website is www.hopeofthepoor.org. And that's significant that the title of the of that website and the mission, Hope of the Poor. In other words, we are engaging the poor who have hope and who survive and do more than survive, who actually live joyfully precisely because of their hope. Now, not everybody is a Catholic Christian, of course, but what the mission brings out, or what the mission enables, is an opportunity actually to meet the poorest of the poor as our brothers and sisters of the same loving God. And I came away being changed by this. What was so different from other missions that I've been engaged in different ways, you know, this is more than just a friendly drop-off whereby you bring food or some sort of emergency supplies to a group of people in desperate need, and you smile, you leave it off, and then you go. this is an actual encounter. And we did this on two separate days. We went down to the city dump. The first day we were plagued by traffic, so we had a lot of time. But what was interesting is that when we went down to the dump, we were joined by families, children and their parents who had formerly been living living in the streets, and in some cases living in sewers, you know, where people would actually throw garbage down. And the stories were amazing, you know, but being able to go down to the dump with people that formerly were what we would call homeless or street people, to get to know them, to engage them, you know them by name, hear their stories, and their witness stories were tremendous. Some of them you can find on the website itself, www.hopeofthepoor.org. And when we got to the dump, we went to several areas. They have various, you might almost say, barrios or communities or neighborhoods where the people know each other very well, you know. And what they do is they earn a living, such as it is, by separating garbage. Now, when you arrive at the dump, you are imbued with the smell, and in fact, that is one of the things that brands those who live there. It was a real encounter with what I might almost call an economic caste system. You know, there are all sorts of things that that can condition and enslave people, locking them into a certain geographical area or a certain economic caste, one might say. In this particular case, it's really the smell of the dump that brands them. If you've been living there for several months, it actually gets into your skin. So, for example, if the children were to attempt to go to school, they would be noted as coming from the dump. So yep. And people would avoid them. And so in order to help provide education for the children, special arrangements had to be made with certain schools in the area where they would actually be able to school the children in an area where they could, you know, would not be associated with the others because they would be rejected if they did that. And the same thing is true if anybody were to try to apply for a job, you know. One of the things that the beautiful things that Craig has done, as I say, his ministry is primarily to people locked in these economic caste systems, whether on the street or in the dump, is he's been able to find ways of helping them to take that next step. And the beautiful thing is how their motivation is extremely strong, but they just need that extra bridge to sort of get to the next step. And as I was mentioning before, the primary industry, if you could call it that, in the dump is separating garbage. So they will separate various types of plastic throwaways and metal goods and put them in bags. And then trucks will come in, take them away, give them a small amount of money. But at least that way they can perhaps purchase some food instead of picking it out of the garbage, as many of them were accustomed to. So the experience, I would characterize the whole experience as joyful, vibrant, and in many ways spiritually transforming, because you could feel the connection. We talk a lot of times about the sacredness of all life, you know.
Yep.
And sometimes when we think about equality, I guess we all have different images, you know, of what that means. Sometimes we talk about like racial equality, and we want to affirm that we are equal in God's eyes, because regardless of what our racial component may be genetically. But this was an opportunity to really experience our common humanity. For example, one of the things that we did is played with them. The kids, you know, and as you may have seen in some of the photos that we posted in the Evangelist, that the children played soccer, you know, on the little level playing field that we had there, just like any other children you'd see in any neighborhood, you know, wherever you go. And then the joy in celebrating something as simple as a birthday. One gentleman, I remember, Reinaldo was his name, told us on the first day that we were there for 2 days in the dump for several hours in each day. And one man said, you know, that tomorrow was his birthday. And we asked him what, and it was his 52nd birthday. And he had never celebrated his birthday before, ever. And yet he knew what his birthday was, you know, and he counted the days. So needless to say, we surprised him the next day, brought in a cake, and celebrated a birthday party. And another part of the dump on that day, we also had a birthday party for three youngsters who were celebrating their birthday in the month of October. So what we brought was two piñata, you know, which is, you know, our paper mache figures. I think one was Captain America and the other was Batman. And we strung them up, you know, and they had a chance to go at it with the bats. You know, the older children actually put blindfolds on, which is the custom. And they went away at it too. And then when it broke, the candy spilled all out. And they, but you know, you were lost in this play, in any sense. Even though if you averted to it, you know, you could be aware of the smell, you could be aware of the poverty, you know, the tatters of clothes that many of them wore. But as you're rejoicing, as you're playing, as you're having fun, what disappeared was any sense of difference.
Yep.
So we were playing with brothers and sisters, and that image will never leave my soul. That sense of the humanity, and not only that, but the unique gift of their courage. I'd have to say their hope. It really is the hope of the poor. Their resiliency is something that I would almost say has become a part of who I am now. I will never forget that. And so that's a brief description of what the experience was. It was very emotional. In many days we there were tears shed. There were as we looked into one another's eyes and stories told, and so it was really an incredible experience that I will never forget.
Yeah, I think in the United States we're so used to a certain style of living that there's a lot we can learn from the poor.
Yes, well, you know, certainly you're right. Certainly the ingenuity, resourcefulness, and for example, they'll tell us how they don't understand why people throw these things away. And I suppose in a way it's good because it gives them something now that they can in turn recycle, if you will, or profit from. But some of the things that they find, for example, the metal goods, and there are unused batteries, you know, which are very obviously identifiable. Sometimes even toys that have been, you know, maybe they can resell some of these toys. Some of the materials that are maybe intact or partly damaged, you know, of all sorts. You know, beads, belts, baubles, you name it. And they will see things, and it amazes them how many things, we become conscious at times of even when we eat, you know, how much food is wasted, maybe not intentionally, but, you know, we get overserved if we even go to restaurants, for example. Some people take doggy bags, which is fine, but sometimes it stays in the refrigerator and you know it doesn't get used. But they have an eye to see things. The other thing is too that the ugliness of being in this dump. To be very very frank, I happened to be with first responders at the World Trade Center when the on September 11th, you know, real call, and I happened to be there, and you know the devastation of the fallen, you know, buildings was just something I'd never seen before, and people have compared it to battle zones, you know, like you might have seen in Saving Private Ryan, for example, some of those scenes, right? You know. And my first emotional, I suppose, flashback was arriving on the dump, and you know, I had that flashback to 9/11, and You know, it is ugly. It is putrid. All of those things. But then, as you spend some time there, you do start seeing colors and the life sort of like emerges out of that as people gradually come out. First the men, then the children, then the women. You know, protecting the children, and then you start noticing the little dogs and the cats. The dogs were all over the place. And what came to mind was the passage in Scripture when Jesus is engaging the Canaanite woman. And remember that she's asking for some favors from Jesus. And Jesus, you know, was saying, well, my mission is to the lost sheep of the tribe of Israel. And she says, well, even the little dogs eat the remains from the master's table. And it occurred to me that the scene that there were so many poor people is probably what Jesus saw every day. You know, that he walked around in areas in Nazareth and other parts of the territory, that probably there were dogs around, and they're basically looking for food. They're very tame. They're very chaotic. They're very disorganized. Cats were a little bit more organized. You know, they sort of like they sort of like traveled together in little groups of three or four, and a little more strategic. You know, and then when they went after whatever they were looking for, they do it sort of together. Every once in a while, they swat the other one. But I mean, it was the life that emerged. You know, and that was sort of like a graphic depiction of the human spirit that was very, very much alive. The smiles.
Oh yeah.
The facial expressions. You know, I did not meet depressed people.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, without being judgmental, overly judgmental, I meet a lot of depressed people as I walk city streets.
Oh yeah.
You know, you look at faces of people, you know, the hangdog look, and sure, there's many things that I'm sure that are, you know, we have to be concerned about. But the overall sense. And I don't think I'm romanticizing here. Mm-hmm. This was not a show, you know, like if you went to a Potemkin village, you know, as you've been in some of the iron block countries, you know, and there was put on a kind of a show. The children were all smiling and singing because they better, because if they don't, you know. But this was not staged. This was totally spontaneous. And it was a palpable human joy that really helped us to connect heart to heart. Yeah,
we don't get that as much, I feel like, in the U.S. Yeah.
It's sad because, you know, one of the things we were reflecting about how our social net, you know, safety net, if you will, in most cities and most parts of the United States, while there is still, you know, severe poverty and malnourishment in some areas, that in most cases, if you know the resources, you can find a meal.
Yeah.
You know, Craig comes from Nebraska, for example. Craig, the founder of this mission, and he says, you know, in the place where he comes from, that it's possible to get five or six meals a day. You know, if you're on the street, and you can sleep. You know, you can find. Unfortunately, so many of the people that we encounter who are homeless are also plagued by various forms of addiction of all sorts, which also is linked at times to mental illness of various sorts. And so that's a complicated and a vicious cycle, but it makes many of those unfortunate folks unemployable.
Yep.
And so the type of support that they need is different. Mm-hmm. In this case, as I mentioned earlier, the poverty, while it may at times result in various forms of addiction, depression, we did see some, you know, some alcohol overindulgence. But by and large, the main obstacle was truly economic, and not an inability to work, not a lack of desire to work. Not a lack of resourcefulness, not a lack of intelligence, but or even a lack of relationship, because there are families that are here. But it really was a barrier. And this is what Hope of the Poor has been very, very blessedly successful in for many people. One woman, Sandra, whose story you can see if you go to the website. again, www.hopeofthepoor.org. She has a story that how she survived, abandoned at the age of two by her own mother, and really, really condemned to live in the streets in extremely dangerous situations. How she survived, she tells her own story better than I possibly could, and the abuse that she suffered at so many different hands. And yet, it is today a joyful, faith-filled, loving woman. And it was so inspiring.
Are you interested in staying up to date with New York State legislation pertinent to the Catholic Church? Do you want your Catholic voice to be heard? Sign up for the Catholic Action Network by going to our website at nyscatholic.org/action-center or texting CAN to 50457. Again, CAN, C-A-N, to 50457. I mean, the whole trip sounds very inspiring, and I think a lot of people would like to get involved, but sometimes we don't necessarily get a chance to take mission trips. So how can we support missions where we are?
Certainly, we just celebrated Mission Sunday, and as you know, there is websites that you can you can follow. You can go to our diocesan websites. We talk about that. Anybody would be interested in supporting this particular mission. I know there are others there in our own diocese. There are several in Haiti, actually, and some of the local, those who are actually listening may be aware of them. But this particular mission, again, repeat, it's www.hopeofthepoor.org. You can go to that website, and if you want to learn more about them. All of the links are there. If you want to make a donation, I'll take it one step further. I fully hope and expect to lead people in the mission that I experienced and to share that really on site. So I hope that in months ahead, that we will be able to bring together actually in some parishes and perhaps inviting some of our seminarians and priests to join, that we'll actually be able to have this experience that I had. I want to share that, and I look forward to being able to do that in the not-too-distant future.
So are you planning on going back?
Definitely. That's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah. I absolutely want to go back, and I've already begun the process of setting that in motion again, too. I can't say once a year, twice a year, you know, but I definitely intend to,
So how do you think we can get more people, especially like young adults, because I feel like that's such a good age to get involved in things?
Well, this is one way of doing it. And thank you for the podcast, because it gives me an opportunity to get the message out. And certainly I've written about this in my columns in The Evangelist, theevangelist.org. And we'll continue to tell the story. But those that best tell the story are those that actually have come out of, have experienced the depth of physical and poverty, but also have been able by their witness. It's more than anything else. It's the witness of the lives of those that have experienced God's love through a mission such as this, and through a missionary organization such as Hope of the Poor. And there are many, many others, and I think what we need to do is continue to publish them so people are aware and conscientize, as we say. Working through Catholic Charities, working through other Catholic Relief Services, for example, which is nationwide and actually international, and to continue to spread the news. There's nothing, though, that is more, in the long run, more valuable than actually experiencing it yourself. Yep. So that's what I hope to do, to actually provide occasions for others, young people, actually people of all ages. The group that we were with, we had a youngster, I think as young as 10 years of age with us, or 11, I think he was 11. And we had oldsters like me, right across. We had some families, people of all ages, all across the board. And this is an experience that everyone really could potentially have. And if you're not, you know, able to actually travel, you can certainly go online and follow the stories as they develop and follow the links that are there and see where your heart leads.
So this was an international trip, but there's a lot going on here in New York and around the country, and we see a dire poverty and tremendous need. Yes. So can you tell the listeners how the church in the Albany Diocese and around the state are trying to meet those needs? And
we've done a number of different things. Of course, you know, with the pandemic, one of the casualties has been many people have lost their jobs or have been put on leave or furlough, you know. And the Catholic Charities in our own area, and I know this happens in other dioceses too, we've sponsored periodic occasions in which we actually, in several parts of the diocese, I participated in one that we did right at our center, where we were able to collect food through the generosity of those that donated it. And it was amazing to see people come by, you know, sometimes driving vehicles that, you know, we were talking not just about people that were in a kind of a cycle of poverty, but people that may have from other economic brackets, if I can put it this way, you know, who normally would be working class people, you know, how we want to characterize them, that were really in need. And we were able to engage them. And again, you know, it has always been the mission of Catholic Charities in our diocese here that we it's all about relationships. And we don't only just, you know, deliver goods and services, but we try actually to engage people and hear their stories. Yeah. And periodically we do have celebrations in which people can tell their stories. They've been helped, you know, by other ways, you know, to find housing. And many of those services are, you can find them on our Catholic Charities website. But it involves housing, it involves food, it involves assistance to people who are experiencing various addictions, psychological services, you know, for people who have who need counseling. We have a whole range of things that help sustain and support people who are. In many times, you know, in the United States, if we can say there's a silver lining, is many of our poverty is transitional. In other words, people go through periods in which they have bad spells, they fall on hard times, they lose a job, there's a death in the family of the main breadwinner, and so they are, you know, they're periodic. The situation that we faced in Mexico City was of a different order. It was people who were actually, as I said, this economic caste system. Yep. And such something has to be done to break that vicious cycle. And that's what organizations like Hope of the Poor do.
All right. So spoiler alert, listeners, we actually pre-record this before they
air. That's why I wasn't sure to say good morning, good afternoon, or this evening, because you may be listening to this any time of day,
yep,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, Bishop, this episode will air just a few days before the church celebrates All Saints Day.
Yes.
So before I let you go, can you tell our listeners if you have any favorite or a couple of favorite saints that you often turn to prayer to, or who you're particularly drawn to?
Yes, a number of different saints and for different reasons. Okay, so I will say I am a great fan of the Teresas. And of course, this is the month of the Teresas, as you know. Big Teresa, Teresa of Avila, Little Teresa, the Little Flower, Therese de Lisieux, and of course, Mother Teresa of Calcutta. And all of them very, very different. And I think it's their differentness that attracts me to them in different ways, you know. I'm particularly humbled by the example of Therese de Lisieux, the Little Flower, who felt herself, you know, not really terribly high on the chain of gifts, which of course is a little bit of self-deprecation because she had a big heart, and she was convinced that even though she experienced her own poverty, she did live in a very humble circumstances, she was absolutely convinced of God's love for her, and she just knew that if she took little tiny steps, she felt like, you know, she couldn't compare herself to Teresa of Avila, who she saw as like a big eagle, you know, too high for her to fly. But she says, I'm just like this little bird, and I'm going to just try. I'm going to crawl up the steps, and I'm going to make my way up this high staircase to heaven, or I guess she envisioned it. And she said, but I just know that God is just going to pick me up and put me on his lap. Her sense of trust in God, in spite of being overwhelmed by her own poverty, which I think is a good model for us today. Sometimes we do feel overwhelmed. How am I going to be able to, you know, support my family, get through the next day, get through this crisis, this challenge? So I have always found her to be very inspiring. St. Augustine also inspires me because he was a searcher. And unfortunately, he, you know, if there was a song to describe his life, his early life, it would have been looking for love in all the wrong places. You know, he loved to enjoy life, but he was missing something. And ultimately, he recognized that his heart was restless because it had not rested in God. And when he finally found the love of his life in the Lord, it just changed his life. But St. Augustine most probably would not have gotten to where he was were it not for his mother, St. Monica, who prayed for him for almost 30 years and never gave up. So one of the reasons that St. Augustine attracts me is because I know that I get through life very much because I know there are people that pray for me. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I may be unaware. And I like to share that because we have no idea sometimes how much we are loved, and of those in our lives who may not tell us, but actually do pray for us and do love us and do support us. So it's just a little note to say, you know, we want to be grateful for all of the goodwill, all of the prayers that people extend towards us that we ourselves may not be aware of. And that includes not only those that are living, but also those who are deceased. That sometimes the people we pray for, maybe our grandparents, our parents, our brothers and sisters, our children, even friends who are deceased, you know, that they're still very, very much a part of God's creation. We are people that believe in the not only the sanctity of life on earth, but its endurance to eternal life. The people of the resurrection. And I've often say this for those of us who are of the Catholic faith or who are certainly gravitating towards that Catholic faith, that there is no more beautiful and real connection with heaven than there is at the Mass. Mm-hmm. Because remember that at Mass, we have in our midst the real sacramental, but the real presence of Jesus. And there's only one Jesus, the same Jesus the saints behold in heaven is the same, and see in the face is the same Jesus we have present at our altar. So we're truly connected in him at Mass every time we receive. So I would just encourage for anyone who is looking for a spiritual growth. You know, a lot of times people say, you know, I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious. See in the Mass an opportunity to really connect with God, with Jesus, with the saints, and with your loved ones, and know that connection is real. When we get together and pray together, you know, at Mass, we are really connected with one another and with our loved ones, living and deceased. And it's a very beautiful truth that we Catholics are very blessed to have and to share. And we need to share it.
Thank you so much for coming on today.
Pleasure, pleasure. Yeah.
Thanks for listening to the Capital Compass podcast, and we are so grateful to Bishop Ed for taking the time out of his busy day to come on the show. It was an honor to have you, Bishop Ed. We hope you enjoyed this episode. We'll be coming out with a new episode every other week. If you'd like to support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, and leave a rating and review. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And to catch all the latest from the conference, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at NYS Catholic Conf and on Facebook at NYS Catholic Conference. Thanks again, and God bless.